Open your Bibles with me to the book of Esther, and we will continue on with our Bible survey. The book of Esther is a fascinating drama. There's only 10 chapters in the book of Esther, and you can sit down and read it very, very quickly. And Esther reads like an amazingly penned drama. There are two main themes going through the book of Esther that are connected, but we'll look at them tonight. What you do see, and it's interesting, few books in the Bible display the providence of God better than Esther, more clearly than Esther. Few books are more obvious in their display of the providence of God and the sovereign working of God. Yet, interestingly, the word God is not found in the book of Esther. Very interesting little fact. The events of the book of Esther are dated around the time of Ezra, and we really learn that more from history than we do from the book of Esther. We have in the book of Esther a king by the name in verse Esther 1:1, King Ahasuerus. And this is actually Xerxes, King Xerxes. And in fact, Ahasuerus is a title, like Pharaoh is a title in Egypt. And Ahasuerus is actually King Xerxes. And he seemed to be three or four kings after Cyrus. Remember, the children of Israel, speaking of Israel as the 12 tribes, remember, we're no longer dealing with the divided nation. Really, all that's left is the remnant. And that remnant was from Judah. And that remnant went into captivity to Babylonia. In Babylonian captivity. Remember, the northern 10 tribes, at that time called Israel, went into Assyrian captivity. Now the southern 2 tribes, Judah, went into Babylonian captivity. And then along comes the Persian Empire, and they stomp out the Babylonian Empire. And now the children of Israel are in Persian control. And the king of Persia, Cyrus, we were introduced to back around the writings of Ezra and so on. He wanted to please all the gods that he could please. And so he let the children of Israel go back to their homeland and rebuild their temple, I believe, to please their God and thus find favor with their God. And so he let 50,000 go back under Zerubbabel's leadership. And then when Zerubbabel left, I believe it was 80 years after that, Ezra left with just a couple thousand and went over there as well. And this king, Xerxes, found in here as Ahasuerus, was reigning under the time frame of Ezra. And so we're dealing with the kind of in the middle of the time when the children of Israel were able to go back to their homeland. And that would put it about 475 BC. As we look through the book of Esther, it's just an incredible story. And of course, it's not just a fictitious story. It's the account of what happened to God's people. And some of the most unlikely things go on in the book of Ezra. In chapter 1, we have the king and his pride. And that's not unlikely. That's pretty normal. But let's read the first 4 verses of chapter 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus that Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces, that in those days when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the palace, in the third year of his reign, he made a feast unto all the princes and his servants, the power of Persia and Media, and the nobles and the princes of the provinces being before him, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty many days, even 180 days. So he is having this 180 days, 6 months. He's having this look how great I am festival. And he is really showing off over the 127 provinces that I'm over. Look how great I am. And in verses 11 and 12, he brings Vashti, the queen, before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look on. But the queen, Vashti, refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore, the king was very wroth, and his anger burned in him. So, not only does he want to show off his kingdom and his riches and his glory, he wants to show off his queen. And if you read the whole context of what's going on, it's a huge drunken party. And the queen says, I don't want to go in there and be put on display in a situation like that. And she says, no, I won't do it. You know, good for her. And, well, the king gets angry. And the king puts the queen, he dethrones the queen. Verse 19, we read that. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate to another that is better than she. So he dethrones her. Chapter 2 is then a search for a new queen. Now, the unlikely thing of this is that one of the Jewish ladies that were there is encouraged by her cousin, Mordecai, to go and enter that search, enter into that search that the king was making, basically probably a talent and a beauty contest, picking the new queen. That's an amazing concept that we would find one of the Jewish ladies involved in something like that. And it kind of makes the wheels to spin a little bit in our minds. And yet what we must understand is that God is working. God is working, and he's going to work through this Jewish lady named Esther to save the children of Israel. He's going to work through her. After the king sees her and finds favor upon her, and the Lord's going to use this one woman to save the children of Israel. Now, I should have brought this out earlier. Remember that under Zerubbabel, 50,000 had been freed to go back to Jerusalem. And then under Ezra, another couple thousand went back to Jerusalem. What we're dealing with here are those Jewish people that remained in Persia. All of them, whoever, how many ever that is, they remained in Persia. Mordecai and Esther are two of them. So he puts out in chapter 2 that they want to find Well, look at verse 4. And let a maiden which pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. And the thing pleased the king, and he did so. So he agrees to this. In verses 5 through 7, then we meet Esther. Now in Shushan, the palace, There was a certain Jew. Now, whenever the Bible talks about a certain someone, a certain place, you know God's hand is in it. God's providential plan is in it. There was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shemai, son of Kish, a Benjamite. Remember that it's primarily the tribe of Judah and Benjamin that made up the southern two tribes, and Mordecai was one of them. And verse 6, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jucni, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther. Her Jewish name was Esther. His uncle's daughter, okay, his cousin, Mordecai's cousin, Esther. For she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So Mordecai's looking out after Esther, and this is where we meet Esther, and the contest goes on, and Esther finds favor in the eyes of the king. Now, something interesting about this, it seems pretty evident, pretty positively sure, that the king did not know that Esther was a Jew. Later on, she'll reveal that. But the king probably wouldn't have chosen her had he known that. But again, the hand of God is working through all of this. And in verses 15 through 18, now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the woman, appointed. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all of them that looked upon her. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus, into his royal house in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and servants, even Esther's feast, and he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king. And so we have here the unlikely event. Again, God sovereignly working and turning and moving. And Esther, a Jewish maiden, finds favor in this Persian king, and he makes her queen. So many things about that story that are unlikely. That he would dethrone his own queen, first of all. But he did. That she would even enter into this, basically, beauty contest. But she did. That he would pick her over the how many ever ladies that were in it. But he did. Because God had a plan to use then and now Queen Esther to basically save the Jews that remained in Persian control, in the Persian region, those that had not gone back to Jerusalem. So then, woven into this whole story, this whole account of what took place, we have Esther and now Mordecai. Now Mordecai, her cousin, discovers something. In chapter 2, verses 19 through 23, and when the virgins were gathered together in the second time, then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people As Mordecai had charged her, for Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. She hadn't revealed that she was a Jew. In those, and there's no indication that the king knew, right? And in those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door were wroth, and they sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when the inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the chronicle before the king. So just a little factoid that seems somewhat irrelevant, but it's not going to be irrelevant at all. That Mordecai overhears of a plot to assassinate the king as he sat at the king's gate. And he tells it to his cousin, the queen, Esther, and she tells it to the king. The whole plot is foiled, and the two men that were hatching the plot were hanged. And the little factoid, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles. There was a log kept of it. And that's it, that's that little piece of the puzzle is so important. Well, then, chapter 3, we meet Haman. Now, Haman just completely hated the Jews. He wanted to kill literally every Jew. And he talks the king into a writing, the king to make a decree to kill the Jews. The king basically says, look, Haman, I trust you. Do as you wish to the Jews. And Haman's like, yeah, all right. And he says, let's kill them all. And the king signs off on it and says, all right. And that account is written in Esther chapter 3. And then in Esther chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, Mordecai convinces Esther to talk to the king. Esther chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. Over the course of time, the king had become distraught, and it had been a while. If you read the whole context, it had been a while. Verse 11 says that the bottom of verse 11 says, I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. Indicating that there was trouble there, that she had fallen out of favor a little bit. She had not been called into his presence for now 30 days. And she was not, by law, allowed to just knock on the door and enter into his presence. She had to request it. He had to request it. And so she is encouraged by Mordecai, talk to the king about what Haman is doing. And she said, all right, I'll do it. Now you fast and pray and you seek the Lord for my safety, and I'll fast and pray and seek the Lord for my safety, and I'm going to go in unto the king, and if I perish, I perish. She shows great courage and great faith. Well, Esther 5, the first four verses relate to us the account that the king did receive her. And the king, in verse 3, said unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? And it shall be given thee to the half of the kingdom. And Esther answered, "If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him." She summonses the king and Haman to this grand feast, this banquet that I'll prepare. At this banquet, she plans to reveal a few things. All right? Verses 9 through 14. Then Haman went forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. Why? Stop right there. Why? He had just been invited to sit around the queen's table with the king. Haman was already quite full of himself, and Haman was already quite sure that the king had great favor upon him, and that'll come out a little more a little later. But this just icing on the cake. Haman went out very joyful that day, glad in heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up. Now, the Jew was supposed to stand up, especially the Jew. And now everybody was supposed to stand up in front of royalty, but especially the Jew. And Mordecai didn't do it. Nor moved for him, and he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he came home, he sent and called for his friends, Zeresh's and Zeresh's wife, and Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and the servants of the king. Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther, the queen, did let no man come with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai, the Jew, sitting at the king's gate. He hated the Jew. He wanted to kill them all, remember? Then Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends said unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high. And tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. So the gallows, Mordecai is going to be hanged on the gallows, and Haman's going to be sure of it. I'm going to get rid of one Jew. If I get rid of any of them, that's going to be Mordecai. Well, Haman's pride is going to be his downfall. And in chapter 6, couple of verses just make me smile. The night before Haman was going to kill Mordecai on the gallows, on that night could not the king sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of records and of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. Okay, that's just cool. Just happens so that on that night, the king can't sleep. And so the king says, oh, you know, what do I do to go to sleep? I know, I'll get somebody to read the minutes of the kingdom, the book of the chronicles. I'll get somebody to read the happenings around me. Now, he's been there, and he would know about most of it. But he wants these things to be read, I think probably as a good sleeping pill. And so they start to read. Verse 2, and it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bechtinah and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on King Ahasuerus. And the king said, what honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this? Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there's nothing done for him. And the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman was come in into the court of the king's house to speak to the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So Mordecai's on his way. I'm sorry, Haman is on his way to go talk to the king about hanging Mordecai. Meanwhile, the king can't sleep and the chronicles are being read to him, and he finds out that Mordecai had saved his neck. He finds out that Mordecai revealed a plot that would, if left to go, would be to his probable demise. And he said, hey, what have we ever done to thank Mordecai? What have we done to honor him? And they said, nothing. And then, you know, Haman comes in. He wants to talk about killing him, Mordecai. And so the king starts in to Mordecai, not knowing, the king starts into Haman and talking to him, not knowing what he wants. The king says, hey, I'm glad you're here, Haman. I need to talk to someone. What would you do to somebody that you really wanted to honor? And it's a really neat account here in Ezra chapter 6. What would you need to do? And Haman said, well, you know, I would get a big horse and I would dress him up this way and I would do all these things to show him honor and prestige. And the king says, Haman, that's a good idea. Do that for Mordecai. And Haman's like, what? I came in here to talk to you about killing him. And you want to honor him. And so the king makes Haman do everything that Haman said. You see, when Haman was asked the question, what would you do? Haman thought the king was talking about Haman. And he said, well, you know, if I want to be honored, this is what I want to do. And king says, that's great. You go do that to Mordecai. And so he does. I mean, he has to or else die. Verses 10 and 11, chapter 6. Then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and brought him on horseback through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And that had to just drive Haman absolutely bonkers. But it just happened that the king couldn't sleep that night, you know. And it just happened that it was written in the Chronicles. And it just happened that the reader of the Chronicles read that particular thing. And it just happened that he realized they had never honored the Lord. Of course, I'm speaking sarcastically. Of course, none of these things just happened. God is directing in all of them. And so, what we read then, later in the book, is that those gallows that Haman made for Mordecai, Haman was put on those gallows and hung. The very gallows he had built for Mordecai are the gallows he hung on. Well, Esther chapter 7. This obviously before that Haman was put on those gallows. So in Esther chapter 7, so the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed, even to the half of the kingdom. Then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given at my petition and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed. And right there, she revealed that she was a Jew. Best that we can tell from the scriptures, that's when Haman found out. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. That was what the law that Haman had been promoting was going to do. But if we be sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, Who is he, and where is he, that durst presume in his heart to do so? And Esther said, The adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. The rest of chapter 7 is basically Haman groveling at the feet of Queen Esther. Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. And he's just a pathetic little man groveling at her feet. And he eventually is, as I said, slain on his own. Verses 5 through 10 in this chapter record verse 10. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Here the Jewish man, Mordecai, had saved him. And now he finds out that his new queen, the Jewish Esther, had been gracious unto him, and she had found favor in his sight. And his heart was softened to the Jewish people. And he said, Haman, why are we doing this? He said, we're not going to do this. And he rewrites the law. He cannot undo that first law, but he rewrites the law, and he makes it such so that the Jewish people can arm themselves and defend themselves. And they knew this attack was coming. Before that, it seems to be just a subversive plot that they didn't know about. But now the king makes a law, and he makes sure that horsemen take the decree to every province and gets the law out there to every people, every person, every Jewish person. Protect yourself. Arm yourself. And we read that in chapter 8. We also read in chapter 8 that Mordecai is advanced in the kingdom. And if you read chapter 8 and 9, the Jewish people are spared and even become victorious in the battles and prosper in the land. Just a little while earlier, Haman had it figured out how he could wipe out all the Jewish people that remained in the Persian kingdom. And through two Jewish people, Mordecai, who just tells about a plot to murder the king, and he is advanced in the kingdom, finds favor in the sight of the king, and Esther, who is made queen because she has found favor in the sight of the king. The king's heart is turned. The king's heart is softened to the Jewish people. And not only are they spared, but they actually prosper for a little while. All this is going on parallel to the rebuilding of the temple back in Jerusalem. It seems to be corresponding at about the same time frame. Chapter 9 and verse 1. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to be put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them. And then chapter 10, just three verses. And the king Ahasuerus laid tribute upon the land and upon the isles of the sea, and all the acts of his power and of his might and of his declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, whereunto the king advanced him, Are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Media and of Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was next unto King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people, speaking peace to all his seed. Another one like Joseph, a child of God, put in the unlikely position of being second in command in a Gentile country to the benefit of that country. Joseph saved not only the children of Israel, but basically all of Egypt with his preparations for the famine. And so Esther is such an amazing little book. And the hand of God is woven through it on every page. And how that God is working to spare his people. How that God is working so marvelously. And yet the word God's never mentioned in the book. You can see him everywhere. And all of this, you see, is working towards Christ. All of this is working towards that drama of redemption. And sometimes when it looks like they're going to be wiped out, God has the right person at the right place to turn it all around. And not only are they not wiped out, but they prosper. And Mordecai has advanced to second in the kingdom. That's amazing. Isn't God amazing? When we read of these accounts, of these things that took place, we recognize more and more what confidence we can have in God. What confidence that we can place knowing he's got this all worked out. We just got to follow him. We've just got to be in the center of his will and follow him. He's got it worked out. And so that's the book of Esther along our Bible survey. Let's pray.